Welcome to episode 189 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read X-Men, Curse of the Mutants by Victor Gishler. And now, the cast begins.
Humdum? I'm not going to call you Humdum.
No.
Hey, Humdum. What's Humdum mean? What does Humdum mean?
It's just the term of endearment. Like Humdum. Like
honey, babe?
No, it's kind of like together, like close person thing to me.
Okay.
Close person thing?
Close person thing.
Hey, guys.
I'm going to call you that. How's it going, close person thing? Hey, Jen, we're looking up foreign terms of endearment.
Okay.
And Dolly's trying to do some German ones, and I'm trying to do some Gujarati and Hindi ones.
So I was real dumb and left my only pair of headphones at work.
Oh, no!
Is the sound quality horrible?
No, actually, it's all good to me.
Okay. Okay. Then I'll record this way and acquire headphones for next week.
What's
Snooky Bootsy? I'm gonna go.
Ciara? Ciara.
I don't even know that one.
What's Shehzadi?
Like princess.
I kind of like that one.
Shehzadi.
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 You're so white, Andy.
I know.
My wife is so brown. Try saying it again.
What, Shehzadi?
No, the little sugar lips one.
Little cabbage?
Zuckerschnauzchen.
It sounds so harsh. It sounds like you're yelling at me. Zuckerschnauzchen.
But that's German.
No, it's not.
German is harsh. Come on, guys. German is a harsh sounding language, right?
I don't know.
Not in my experience. It sounds closer to French than anything else.
Thank you, Jen. Although I don't appreciate the comparison to French. Thank you for backing me up halfway.
It totally sounds like French.
I don't like
French. French is a good language.
My one experience with France and French people was in Paris, which I hear is the mistake, so.
Oh, yeah. Go to Provence. Everyone's friendly. They'll talk to you, like, all day long. Ask you what life is like in California.
Because I took a trip from Germany to Spain, and the only stop in France was in Paris.
Like, some Parisians are nice, but when they're in the really touristy areas, they're, like, pre-fed up. I don't know.
It's kind of like us with San Francisco.
Yeah, or New York. Yeah. Like, you're just like, fuck you. But no, French people, in general, in my experience, are really friendly. Like, friendlier than people in the Bay Area.
Gummibärchen.
What?
Gummibärchen.
Gummibärchen? Gummy bear?
Schnooky putzi. I like schnooky putzi, because it sounds like something somebody would actually say. Schnooky putzi.
All right.
Bärchen. Zuckerbär.
Good night.
Good night.
I'm gonna go to sleep.
Okay, bye, I'm gonna put him back on headphone.
Bye, Mitali.
Be nice to my Snooky Putzi.
Okay.
That doesn't even. That's such a female gendered phrase.
I like French. You call people ma petit chou. It's my little cabbage.
Oh yeah, we were just looking that one up.
Oh my god! So I discovered the slow motion video thing on my iPhone. And one of my dogs can catch really well, the other cannot. So I have a video of me trying to teach the other dog how to catch, and it's just like these slow motion videos of balls hitting him in the face and bouncing off. And then he looks really confused and goes after him.
That sounds
my mom
great.
Says I'm mean, but I think they're hilarious.
No, that's great. So, David.
Sup, dog?
I have $350 saved up to start using towards either a snow trooper kit or some Mandalorian armor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, I'm primarily wanting to go snow trooper, even though it's less popular than stormtrooper, and there's not really a lot of snow out here, so it doesn't quite fit, but I think snow troopers are badass, because in the entire original trilogy, every battle you see anybody fight for the Empire, the only one they win is the fucking stormtroopers. Or the fucking snowtroopers. Those are the only ones that win their fight.
Yes.
And they're badass. But if I wasn't doing it alone, I could be persuaded to go Mandalorian. Because it is cheaper and more customizable.
I would say Mandalorian just because they're freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Well, and plus if you, like, well, okay. Whether you do Mando or snowtrooper, it will be enough to convince me to actually get the Mando armor.
See, and my other thinking, too, is, like, I could start with, like, just some of the pieces. and just wear it to cons with like a suit or something stupid, you know? Because I don't want to do the whole thing at once. So if I don't get the whole Snowtrooper set put together and approved or whatever in time for Celebration, I could get like the Snowtrooper helmet and get like a white suit getup and do that.
No. Get the helmet and then the cape-like thingy and the white suit.
Yeah. And the weird backpack thing that they have.
You gotta get a pimp cane, too.
Yes. See, or I could do the same with Mandalorian stuff. Get a Mandalorian. And plus, then, I was also thinking if I do Mandalorian, then I could do a whole headcanon, because the dented helmet, both dented helmet and Mando mercs encourage headcanon characters.
Well, that's kind of like Mandalorians. That's like kind of their deal, is to...
Yeah.
Is they make their own armor.
They make their own armor, they attach like found stuff. Together. Yeah. So you could really do like anything. And then if I do the headcanon, then I could put that in my Star Wars Online character. I could repaint a Slave 1 figure for X-Wing minis. I can make it a whole thing.
Word.
I don't know. That's my debate. And I don't want to do both, because I hope I'm not going to be the spat all my life. So I want to like get one. And then maybe, if God forbid, I actually lose weight someday.
Well, the Mandalorian one is probably easy to redo because, I mean, it's like plates on top of like a jumpsuit, stretch suit. Right?
Yeah, which is also the Snowtrooper one is like the same kind of thing. The Stormtrooper is harder because like a lot of the plates go like around the stomach or like around the thigh. But the Snowtrooper one is basically like a thermal suit, but you know, you don't actually get a thermal suit, but it's just like a white like baggy cloth thing that you wear with basically like knee pads and elbow pads over it. So most of the pieces on that are like one size fits all too, which is probably the main reason I'm not thinking of going Stormtrooper.
Maybe just, I mean, if you want to just helmet. Do, if you just want to have a costume, a Jedi is pretty easy, right? I mean,
if I just want to have a costume, I just do Han Solo. I'm already more than halfway there.
Yeah.
I just need to get a proper vest and a proper shirt, and then I'm pretty much set. And real boots, not wearing the fucking stupid-ass cowboy boots. The only goddamn boots I could find. Every picture I see that has them in there, I'm like, oh, gotta crop that before I put it online. They're dumb.
I was, like, reading, I found a website called The Mandalorian Arsenal, and the guy makes 6 to 8 weeks for full armor kit. Add one additional week if ordering a helmet.
Ooh, he makes female kits. You could get Mitali to dress up with you.
She said she'd rather do Klingon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's hardcore Trekkie. And I was like, do you want, like... I had to be clear, like, do you want, you know, post-Deep Space Nine Klingon? Or do you want, like, Lursa and Bator female Klingon with, like, the boob diamond? And she was like, I want the not-boob diamond. And I got disappointed.
Always boob diamond.
I know. I just got onto mycomicshop.com, and I saw one item in my cart. And so I was like, what the fuck is in my cart? And I click on it, and it's Terra Witch of the Black Rose 2010 10th Anniversary Hardcover Edition.
Taunting you.
Why the fuck is this in my cart? Limited to 1,000 copies, but yet they still have some in stock. That's amazing.
I should buy it for Grant.
Yes. Okay, you guys ready?
Okay, you should say do sacrilegious, okay?
Sacrilegious?
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to do fanged, but sacrilegious works.
Well, because they turn him into holy water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the best part of that comic.
I don't know about that. Okay, everybody, welcome to another sacrilegious episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with Jen.
What?
David.
Oh, I can't believe you let Jen go. You put Jen before me this time.
I have to. Every once in a while, ladies first. Anyway, this week we're finishing up our Dracula versus Blade and Friends series of shows by reading X-Men Curse of the Mutants by Victor Gishler. It collected issues 1 to 6 of the 2010 X-Men run, along with stuff from other things in the trade. But I didn't read the trade. I read on Marvel Digital Comics Unlimited. And
so did I.
And I couldn't find the spotlight thing. And I don't know what was in there. So basically, we're just going to talk about 2010 1 to 6. Which I feel like is probably enough.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So, what did you guys think of this one? Let's just get into it.
This was a comic.
Sure, it sure was.
Yep. Oh my god. I do agree with David, though, that turning Iceman into holy water was indeed the best part of this.
Well, see, to me, it's the best and the worst part. It's awesome because it seems like such a great idea. Like, why didn't they think of this before? But there's like the splash page of him getting blessed. And then there's like one panel where he's killing vampires, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all we got of the holy water Iceman. Holy
I really thought he was going to like freeze the ocean and kill them all from the water or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like there's so much cool stuff could have been done with it, but
yeah, I feel like that was the best idea, but it did let me down. For me, my favorite moment of this one was, just because it made me giggle, was when Cyclops said, "I just want you to follow your heart." Because it was like this somewhat tense moment. They reanimated the Lord of Vampires that everybody thought was a bad idea. All of this stuff. And Cyclops is just, "I want you to follow your heart."
I feel like this whole comic was like about bad ideas.
Yes, this whole fucking thing is a bad idea.
Like, okay, let's just get in. I'm just going to start going into this. Like, okay. The whole thing with Wolverine and him being turned into a vampire, but then there was like the nanobots that turn off the healing, his healing factor or something.
Dude.
It's like, okay, why didn't they tell him that that was going to happen?
Right?
Well, because then if he turns to a vampire, he'll tell them. Like, that part makes sense to me. Honestly, that does. Like, you can't tell Wolverine, because then Wolverine turns into a vampire and goes under, like, the will of what's the guy's name?
Zaris.
The same way, like, people fell under the will of Dracula in last week.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that makes sense to me. But what gets me is, they tested his blood for healing factor, right? They didn't know there's fucking robots in there.
Well, it's like, how do you test for healing
fucking robots! Factor? I don't know, do you slice, like, a blood cell in half and see if it coagulates back together? If you're fucking slicing it in half, how do you not see a fucking robot right there? I imagine they're cutting a blood cell apart to try and see if it's going to like recoagulate into a single cell, except there's a robot there pushing the two sides of the cell apart, and they're just ignoring the fact that there's a robot there and being like, yeah, he's not regenerating. Fucking of course he's not.
I don't know, maybe they just like stabbed him or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, right? Like maybe they just shot him in the foot and they're like, oh, it's not healing.
Then he probably would have bled out.
But Jen, they were in lab coats. They were doing science.
I like how the vampire scientist was wearing, he was wearing red glasses.
Yeah.
And he had red eyes too. I don't know why that's jumped out to me when I was like reading it.
So I feel like the whole Wolverine plan, it's not like they really needed him to turn his back on the vampires, because it's not like they followed him into the lair or anything. They just did it so that he would know where he was going. But he went in the first place, so he already knew. It was not a well thought out.
Well, I think maybe the reason they did that is because, like, Cyclops knew they wanted to get Wolverine, so he sent him, and then I don't know.
He's trying to be, what's his name, Pete Wisdom, and then he just wasn't because he's not that clever. Because
there's no reason for Cyclops to give up Wolverine, right? Like, it makes sense for Zaris to want Wolverine, because Wolverine would be awesome on the battlefield because he's basically indestructible, and if he's indestructible and gets the extra power and strength from being a vampire, sick, right? Like, with the claws and stuff, and he can kill almost anything. Those claws can cut through all of the people on their, like, tough skin team, right? That gets you through that line, and then you're set. So from Zaris's perspective, it's a good plan. You want Wolverine. But, like, I still don't understand why Cyclops let him go if Cyclops was already assuming that... Because that plan, Cyclops has to already assume that Jubilee has been turned into a vampire.
Ooh, I have another theory.
Huh.
It's because Cyclops is a dick. Because think about it. He gets to dick Wolverine and be like, it was part of my plan. You don't got to be mad at me. He gets to basically, like, point his finger at Zaris at the end and be like, ha ha! And then he gets to feel smug.
So it's all just for Cyclops.
It's like strategic masturbation. That's what he's doing right there.
Wow.
No, it makes perfect sense if he did it just to please himself. Right? If he could be like, yeah, Cyclops number one.
Maybe he's trying to impress Emma.
Only reason it makes sense.
He's trying to impress Emma.
You know, I'd believe that. I'd believe that. This Cyclops is weird, though. This Cyclops isn't like the Cyclops I remember.
In the synopsis in, the very first issue, it says that the X-Men are under his capable leadership. And I'm just like, nah, man.
No.
Nah. He's super... I don't know. He's not as emo. That was surprising. Jubilee was the emo one here.
See, that might be it, though. Might be just say he's confident. Because everything we've read with Cyclops before, he's not confident in himself as a leader. Because he's always either hiding behind other people or being influenced from other areas. Like, either he's hiding behind Professor X, or we will read him and there's some, I don't know, but am I really making my decisions, or am I being controlled by my people that are trying to prop me up? What was that one? It was the Grant Morrison one where he thinks that he's being controlled by Emma Frost.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like he never is self-confident. And in this, that seems to be the big difference, is that he's self-confident.
And he was way more tolerable in this one.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think he was a better leader, but he wasn't a good leader. it's bad decisions all around. When they find out that they're overrun, they come up with a plan to unleash Dracula, and they're all just like, it's the only plan, so it's the best plan. No, that's a terrible logical fallacy. No part of this requires you to unleash Dracula, who, by the way, that turned out to be a dumb idea. Because what did Dracula really do?
He beheaded his son. That was cool.
Yeah, but his son had already lost.
He wore a cape very fashionably.
See, I feel like that was another bad decision. Because before Dracula walks into that room, all of the vampire tribes are about to split up again. Which is exactly what you want. You want them to split up and start fighting each other, and then you can pick them apart and push them out of your city. That's what you could do if you're Cyclops. But instead, they brought back Dracula to kill Zaris, do the alpha male thing, and take all the tribes back under his wing. So you'd have the united vampire state still just under worse leadership.
I like this idea, too, that Cyclops thinks that Dracula will stick to an implicit deal.
Yeah. What motivation does he have to do that?
He doesn't. None whatsoever. And it's not even like Cyclops did the thing that the British did where they said, oh, well, you have explicit honor. You know, he was just like, maybe it'll work.
Right? And I do appreciate Dracula at the end, the three panels where he's staring down Cyclops. And Cyclops has the best poker face because he only has half a face. But basically Dracula's just like, I like your balls. I'm going to let this fly. It's like, all right, fine.
Those were excellent panels, by the way.
Those were, yeah.
It was like watching a movie or something, because it was like, zoom in on Cyclops, zoom in on Dracula, back to Cyclops, back to Dracula, who has a smirk on his face now.
Do you mean movie or Old Spice commercial?
That's what we described. Well, if I describe it, it sounds like an Old Spice commercial.
I'm just saying, maybe this comic is an Old Spice commercial, and we just don't know it yet.
How could I have missed that?
Old Spice, everyone's wearing it. It was actually Scratch and Sniff when it was released in serial form.
Oh, well, I'm disappointed then.
Yeah. Sorry, I've had too much tequila.
It's fine. Oh, and then the other good Cyclops moment was also back and forth when he was talking to Zaris before shit went down, you know? And, they're throwing threats back and forth, and Cyclops is like, you better listen, because I'm only saying this one time. And he finishes with, you'll preside over the greatest slaughter of vampires ever known. And it's like, boom, drop the mic, walk away. Because there's a bunch of the stuff in this comic that made me laugh and made me roll my eyes. But that, the writing in that scene with the back and forth was genuinely a little bit tense. And Cyclops really did. He's like, this is the way it's going to be. Take it or leave it. Suck on my balls. That was it was great.
Cyclops, he, like you said, had a bunch of pretty good lines. on the sillier side, he had this, like, running egg metaphor.
Yes.
Where Dracula is Humpty Dumpty and he's making omelets and breaking eggs, and it was, like, said 3 or 4 times.
That whole exchange, they're just so quippy.
What's the...
Dracula, what did Dracula say? Like, I hope you arrived to see the... I forget what he said, but then Cyclops says, just the finale. You're gonna need a mop. And Dracula says, being Lord of Vampires is messy business. And then Cyclops goes back to the eggs thing. You've got to break eggs to make omelets. It's like, what the fuck?
Come on, don't you know that's how leaders talk?
He says it like twice earlier in the trade, too. And it's at this point, it's become like a literary conceit. You could write a paper on it, like Great Gatsby and the Green Light.
I don't know if you could write a paper on this.
You should. That's what I'm saying. You should. Cyclops and his eggs. His vampire eggs. But it's like, I really enjoy that the writer kind of like latched onto the egg thing and was like, I'm just going to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it takes some large huevos to do that.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Well done. Well done. So, but I feel like, okay, Cyclops in this is actually entertaining, but I think it's because everybody else in this kind of sucks or doesn't matter. I don't know.
Yeah. This comic basically has 4 characters and then like scenery. It's Cyclops, Wolverine, Xeris, and Jubilee. Those are the 4. Oh, 5. Okay, Dracula.
Yeah,
those are the 5 characters. Everybody else is just in the background.
Yeah.
They're there for Cyclops to, like, give orders to. He could be, like, yelling orders at, like, houseplants, and it would be the same. Oh, I guess Blade's in it, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Blade.
Blade's the gritty anti-hero of this comic.
No, Blade was the chump of this comic. He got...
Did you see his mustache in this? It was, like, very bushy.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was such a full mustache.
It also changed lengths at times, it seemed. Like,
yeah,
okay, so sometimes it was kind of just a goatee, and then other times it bordered on, like, handlebar Old West. And then at one point, I think in issue 3, maybe, it was almost a Fu Manchu.
Well, I mean, that goes in tandem with his, like, lightning bolt slash arrow hair.
Oh, my God.
Sometimes, like, those little patches on, like, the side, the like, crown of his head, sometimes they were, like, lightning bolts. Sometimes they were straight-up arrows, like, pointing to his eyes.
And they, like, changed...
Sometimes they
changed
weren't
length.
There at all.
They, like, changed length and stuff.
Yeah.
This comic, man. I don't even know.
I feel so bad, though, because the whole reason we started doing this Dracula versus Blade and Friends is because we played a game of Heroclix with my buddy Rage, our buddy Rage, who always plays the Vampire Jubilee figure, so we wanted to read this Vampire Jubilee trade, and it's terrible. So I feel bad. I kind of want,
like,
him to read it so he can know how she gets turned into a vampire, but I kind of don't want to break his heart like that.
I think he'll still love it.
Probably. He likes circle boobs.
There's
a lot of circle boobed art in this comic.
Here's the thing with this comic. It's not a good comic, but damn, it was pretty entertaining.
Yes.
Yeah.
I laughed a lot, but not at funny at funny places. Well, at least I think they were supposed to be funny, and then places that clearly weren't supposed to be funny, but...
I think there are parts where
this comic...
where it ends up being delivered like a joke, but it was supposed to be badass. Like, I really do think that just follow your heart line was supposed to be badass-ish, but it just comes off as fucking hilarious.
Like... this comic spent a lot of time... We spent a lot of time looking at Cyclops, like, talking.
There's a pretty good gratuitous butt shot of him, too.
Yeah, but, like, most of the comic is focused on him talking at everybody else. And then every once in a while, we get a peek into, like, something cool happening to one of the background characters. Like, Iceman being turned into holy water. Or Angel turning into Archangel.
That was sick.
Yes.
It's like these little one-panel things that it's like, oh, man, that's badass. Oh, wait. Oh, there's Cyclops again.
Dude, and...
Oh, shit. Like, Wolverine was... His healing power was turned off. Oh, wait. Cyclops again. It's like that whole thing. It's like... I really wanted there to be more, like, holy water stuff happening.
Dude, and I honestly... I got to the point where I was kind of annoyed Because I was sitting there reading, and I was thinking, you know, I thought this was an X-Men comic, and I wonder who's on this X-Team, right? Because there's always, like, five or six X-Teams.
Mm-hmm.
And the core X-Men tend to split up and go this way or that way, you know? So, like, there's these four or five X-Men are this team, these four or five are that team. And so I was thinking, all right, who's going to be the team here? And the team is basically just Cyclops, Wolverine, and Colossus, plus everybody else for a panel or two. And I got to start, I started getting kind of annoyed because I was like, there's six issues of this, right? And Rogue shows up for literally a single panel. And I'm like, why even have Rogue there? She's not a part of the team. You never see her before or after that, like, one panel while they're going around the city, like, engaging the vampires in combat in their hiding holes. And it's like, why even have her there? Why even do, like, can you just, like, have four or five? I get that it's Utopia, maybe, like, the home base for all of them. But, I don't know. Just felt like such a waste for some of these cameos.
Wait, you know who was really awesome?
Tell me.
Dr. Nemesis.
I had no idea who that was, but I was like, Doctor in a fucking cowboy hat. I'm down.
Yeah, who is this guy?
He's Dr. Nemesis.
I don't
that
know.
That doesn't give me context, David.
I think his power is that he's really smart.
Hmm.
Like, and that he's kind of an asshole.
So
but he's awesome.
He's Dick Beast.
So he's part of a team, an X-Men sub-team called, okay, get this.
X-Club?
X-Club, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And remember the doctor from the Joss Whedon X-Men run?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The Indian lady?
Yeah.
That's her. She's in the X-Club, too.
Oh.
I think there's a third person also.
Is that third person also a doctor?
I don't know. Maybe it's that guy who looked like a chubby Reed Richards, who was always sitting at a computer, who I had no fucking clue who that guy was.
Yeah, yeah, and he's wearing, like, a Dash Rendar vest thing.
Yeah, but also, he's kind of also wearing, like, a flannel shirt. Like, maybe he's a lumberjack. I don't...
Yeah, he's just perpetually in the background.
He's, like, the computer guy.
Yeah.
He's the X-Men, he's the X-Men's IT guy. Okay. So, it's Dr. Nemesis, somebody named Dr. Yuriko Takaguchi, and Dr. Kavitha Rao.
All right.
Okay, so Dr. Nemesis' deal is, I think he's, like, super old, too.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you never really see his face, and these people are all drawn comic book-style people, so they're all either super buff or super busty. All
right, so on the Marvel Wiki, Dr. Nemesis' occupation are as follows. Terrorist, okay. Scientist, formerly Nazi hunter, and Nazi agent.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Comics.
Yeah. What? I'm trying to figure out what his, like, powers are.
Scientist. That's a superpower, right?
Oh, his powers. Oh, he has the self-evolved intellect.
Yeah, so you're right. He's just mutant smart.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But he's like cool. He's so cool. I don't know. I think he's awesome.
It's the hat, man. It's all in the hat.
Maybe it's because he's wearing all white and he's got, like, the surgical mask. And
I need to buy a hat.
What?
And I could be cool like this guy. I need to buy a hat.
He just seems awesome. I feel like I don't have enough Dr. Nemesis.
None of Dr. Nemesis in your life. You should get a Dr. Yeah. Nemesis hero click.
There probably is one.
Probably.
He has, like, a really confusing resume. I'm still hung up on that.
I like former Nazi hunter and the Nazi agent.
Like, I feel like he'd have trouble getting a job unless he got the interview, got to, like, impress you in person.
Sweet. So he's, like, the Nazi version of Blade, because Blade was a vampire, and now he's a vampire hunter.
But wait, Blade is still a vampire. Is Dr. Nemesis still a Nazi?
The way it's phrased, he was the hunter, and now he's an agent. Because it doesn't say former Nazi agent. It says former Nazi hunter.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe he hunted them and was like, oh, this is some solid ideology. A horrible, horrible shitbag.
This is some solid ideology.
Oh, see, he is like 100 years old. He was born in 1906.
Okay.
Well, he looks good for his age, I guess.
It's because of science.
And Nazis. Oh, maybe not.
So wait, when
maybe,
was your guy...
Yes, that's what I was going to do. Maybe Nazis.
When was your guy's first inkling that this comic was not good?
First page or so?
Yeah, pretty much immediately.
I'll tell you guys mine.
Okay.
It's when I got the author's idea of what San Francisco is. Because it says that they're in San Francisco now, and so the first thing you get in San Francisco is people playing fucking hacky sack, and then you get to Union Square, and there's like a kumbaya group out there, and it's like, oh, hippies, right, that's San Francisco. Like, this person has never been to Union Square, didn't bother doing that research, because you know it's in Union Square, tourists and homeless people, there's nobody fucking singing kumbaya in Union
Square. And it's like a super capitalist place. I mean, there's like all kinds of stores. There's a giant Macy's.
They even had Lacey's too. They riffed off it. But that actually frustrated me, because it's like, don't just go with stereotypes if you've never... maybe he has been to the place. Maybe he lives here for all I know and he's going with the stereotype anyway.
But it just felt...
Yeah, like if you go to San Francisco, pretty much any part, it's filled with like really unhappy homeless people, which is really sad.
And hipster.
And then really rich hipster businessmen.
Yeah, and that's it. There is no such thing as a middle class in San Francisco. Which is like...
Education.
Which is like everything that's in here is the middle class in the comic.
He's thinking of Berkeley.
Yeah.
Which does have some of this, actually.
Yeah, see, maybe they're in the middle of the bay and not out towards the ocean.
They're hanging out on Telegraph.
Does Berkeley have giant dudes in gimp masks and full, like...
See, that's the one thing that did belong in San Francisco.
Yeah. I think I've seen that guy at Folsom Street Fair.
Well, there's that old fort that's an S&M porn studio now. Fuck, what fort is that?
I have no idea.
It's on the north side of the city.
I know what you're talking about. There's like a bunch of BDSM clubs in the city, I think.
Well, yeah, there's a bunch of clubs, and then there's the like actual porn studio.
Oh, yeah, you know, you can take tours of it.
Yeah.
For like $30 or something.
Yeah, I went on there with an ex-girlfriend once. Anyway, it's not a very accurate description of the city, and it feels weird off the front. And like, okay, this isn't going to be good. And then there's explosive vampire terrorists.
How exactly did Jubilee get infected? Did she, like, get some of it in her mouth or something?
Her nostrils.
Well, my understanding is that they infected that vampire, and then the vampire went to the middle of the square and blew himself up. And then everybody that got in, like, membrane contact with that blood from the vampire exploding then became a vampire. So, like, if it got on your eyes, mucus contact in your mouth, things like that.
It feels like the True Blood AIDS metaphor, except it was only that one part here and not carried through.
Yeah, like they engineered this like plague specifically for that incident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't make that into like a big metaphor here. That could have been really bad.
I got the notion that they were targeting Jubilee also.
Yes.
Yeah, they were. They definitely were.
Because she has a creepy bond with Wolverine.
You know, I don't think their bond was ever creepy, though. I don't think Wolverine ever creepered on her.
Well, like, okay.
He was more like an uncle, like a cool uncle.
Dude, this is why Xeris is stupid, too. So we already talked about why Cyclops is a terrible leader, and this is why Xeris is stupid. If you want to get Wolverine, well, I was going to say Wolverine's a drunk, so you just go down to, like, the diviest dive bar and blow your vampire up there. Except, I guess, in this comic, he mentioned something about how he doesn't drink anymore. Doesn't he?
I don't know.
Or was it smoke?
Smoke. Yeah, no, you're right. He doesn't smoke anymore. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you just go find the diviest dive bar and do it there? If you're gonna specifically target an X-Man, why not target the one you want instead of targeting the bait?
Well, it's because Jubilee doesn't have powers anymore, and this was how they got her back in the comics.
Yeah. It's there for the plot, and not because it's actually a good idea.
No, well, like we established at the beginning, this comic is about bad ideas.
It's true. Xeris is full of them.
Yeah.
And then Jubilee gets full of them, too.
I mean, Cyclops is kind of full of them also, except he does it with such style that we ignore it a little bit.
With such huevos.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm looking at a big plot hole, because Xeris' idea wouldn't have worked unless Cyclops did his nanobot thing. Because Xeris' idea, like, he was even like, well, even if it doesn't work, we've captured him, but do they really think they're going to hold Wolverine? That's really idiotic.
Well, I think their primary plan was to turn him into a vampire, but if his healing factor stopped that from happening, at least they could find a way to contain him.
Yeah, and it's like you said, they could have just blown up the guy next to Wolverine.
Yeah.
So it's like Xeris knew Cyclops was planning this, which, that's plot holy.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's too much it doesn't work without the forethought, but then if you knew that was going to happen, why did you even do it that way? It's like setting yourself up for failure.
I want to imagine, like, Cyclops found Xeris and handed him, like, a stack of $1 bills. It was like, help me out with this, bro, you know. Like, just do this. Do me a solid here.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my headcanon. Yes, Cyclops handed Xeris $34 in ones and was like, hey, can we do this so I look cool?
I'm trying to impress Emma Frost here.
Promise not to bring your dad into this. Oh!
And Emma Frost,
Emma Frost was awesome in this comic.
Today has been a day for me. Someone linked me a thing about people bitching about a Spider-Woman comic cover where they're like, feminism. Complete, and like, they'd never put Spider-Man in this position, and there's like three covers with Spider-Man in that exact position. In fact, someone like had a video of like the butt sticking up being superimposed, and it's the exact position. The exact butt. So everyone's offended about Spider-Woman's ass, and I'm just like, I'm done with internet feminism, this is... And then I get here and I'm like, oh man, Emma Frost, don't make me eat my words. She was just the worst in this. She's like vaguely condescending to Scott, but in a way that's still very like, yes, honey. And she's hanging off him and she has the big circle boobs. And granted, Scott also had circle boobs, yeah. So I'm forgiving on that account. But it's like, Emma, you are much cooler than this. Just say something, anything useful.
See, that's the thing. Like, not
relevant.
Like, Emma's always been a character who's super comfortable with her sexuality and the fact that she is sexy, and she always puts her attractiveness out there up front and uses it to her advantage.
Which is cool, but always been that kind of empowerment. Here?
Right, but the problem is in this, almost like whenever she's on the page, she's like hanging off of Cyclops. And she's not the only one who does it. Like, most of the other female characters are... like, standing really close to the male characters, and the male characters are all really spaced out, and it's just like, these are the pairings in my head. And it's like, what the fuck is going on here? And there's other instances, and Jubilee really is just draped on Xeris half the time, so...
Well, he's using his vampire powers on her or something.
Yeah. It's just that really... most of the women in this, aside from being eye candy with the circle boobs and all having the exact same face, they're also always posed with dudes, hanging off of dudes. It's like, I don't know.
I mean, if they had any plot relevance aside from going like, nyeh, I wouldn't care. But man, like, Jubilee is just the whiniest, emoest, saddest teenager ever in this comic. She is like a goth kid at prom. And then, you know, or like, she's like the good girl who finally, like, you know, discovered you can drink booze and smoke weed in your parents' attic and not get caught, and suddenly she's like, you're not my real dad, Wolverine. Like, damn, what are you doing? This is not rebellion, this is idiocy. There's a difference. And then Emma Frost is just like, hey, Scott, yeah. Ugh, just, meh. They're so dumb. And this is not even like, oh, I'm so enraged because women in comics. This is just like, these characters are dumb here.
Yeah. It's not even like feminism or anything like that. It's also a little bit insulting as a male reader because Emma Frost's costume, half the time is her costume. The other half the time is just like strips of cloth to cover her nipples.
Andy, did you not know that is exactly what you should like as a man, and if you like anything else, you're wrong.
And it's like, my favorite character in this was Storm, because she was a legitimate badass, and has nothing to do with the way like her costume is. Her boobs were drawn the exact same way as Emma Frost's boobs, who looked exactly like Jubilee's boobs. It's like, if I'm going to objectify down to boobs, even then, they're all the same. And they should not all be the same. Unless you're putting out, unless the artist is like, these are the best boobs. So I'm going to put these boobs on everybody, because boobs.
They were weird boobs. They, like, start at the collarbone and go halfway down to the belly button. And it's like, that's not how boobs work.
Comics! Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if some of this... The thing is, like, this random stuff with the art, I don't know if it's the artist or if it's the writer's direction. I don't know. Like, so half the time when Cyclops is talking, he's standing there in that pose where he's standing and he's got the one hand, like, down by his waist and the other hand is, like, half curled and, like, clutched in a fist. Like, it's that, like... He has the same pose half of this comic.
And even on the covers, too, he's like... Fist.
Yeah, and his fists are, like, always clenched. That's the default position. Whenever he's not, like, pointing at something, his fist is clenched. And I don't know about you guys, but I don't walk around like that.
You don't?
No. Only when I'm thinking of about He-Man. Then I do.
You know, Angel, Warren Warrington III, also has the fist pose.
Maybe because the artist doesn't know how to draw just relaxed hands, I don't know.
Maybe it's like, what is it, Rob Liefeld can't draw feet or something?
Oh, God, he cannot.
Can only draw punching. Well, there's another use for a closed fist, but we don't need to get that far into the explicit tag.
What, fisting?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Said we don't need to get that far, Andy.
Get that far in?
I hope your wife doesn't hurt me.
No, she won't. She doesn't listen to this. It's fine.
You know, I'm just scrolling through the pages again, and I feel like the jet ski was the perfect Jubilee getaway vehicle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's like mega 90s.
Yeah. I wanted, you know what always stood out to me, like, about Jubilee, like, the thing that, when somebody talks about her, the thing that pops into my mind is in the X-Men cartoon, and somebody asks her a question, and her response as, like the of course kind of thing, she says, does a mall babe eat chili fries?
What?
But the way she says it, it's, like, so fast that it sounds like she says, does a mall baby chili fries? And until recently, I was like, what does that mean, mall baby chili fries? And then I was like, oh, it's a mall babe eat chili fries. And so that, like, is how that's what I think of when people talk about Jubilee is, does a mall babe eat chili fries? And so anytime she does something like that, like anything, just everything reminds me of that. Like people in yellow coats, I don't know, fireworks.
That's perfect.
But yeah, I feel like if Jubilee was going to escape on anything, jet ski.
Yeah.
I mean, how close to San Francisco is their little island?
I think it's supposed to be like Alcatraz, but just another island kind of there.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. How far is the ferry to Angel Island? I feel like that'd be the farthest they would get and still consider themselves San Francisco. Well, I don't know. Everybody fucking considers themselves San Francisco if they want to. Like the fucking San Francisco 49ers playing an hour away from San Francisco. Anyway, sorry. Different topic. Just pisses me off every time I think about it.
Right, fucking Marin.
Yeah, I don't know. The art in this was, like, overall just bad/inconsistent. I don't want to say bad, though, because, I mean, it's still comic book art, and you have to have a level of... I mean, I hate saying bad art, because I cannot draw this well. I can't. So I don't want to call it bad art, because it's fucked up better than I can do. So I don't want to call it bad art.
I think it is. It's well done, but it's like super it's like stereotypical comic art.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will say, like, someone put a comment in, like, how people switch places between panels. People blink between panels in this. They just teleport.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like consistency problems. There's one point where Scott is talking to Emma, and you know how, like, somebody is giving, like, a paragraph worth of text, and it starts in a text bubble, and then it goes into, like, word boxes, but it's still in air quotes, so you know it's the same line of text? And it starts with them both inside, and Scott with his, like, cowl up and visor on, and then the word kind of wraps from the top down to the right and then down to the bottom. And at the top, he's cowl up, visor on, and then in the bottom, he's cowl down with his sunglasses on, and they're outside instead of inside. And it's like, were you talking and walking? Because in the first frame, you weren't walking. You were standing there in that pose with your clenched fist halfway up. Like, you had your leadership clenched fist pose, so you weren't walking. Unless you walk like that, I don't know. But, like, it reminded me of X-Men 3. You remember that scene where all of the Brotherhood are on a bridge? They're all on the Golden Gate Bridge, and Magneto lifts the bridge up, and he's moving the bridge to land it on Alcatraz, except some editor didn't notice that he lifted the bridge and it's daytime, and he drops it and it's nighttime. He's just not supposed to notice.
I thought it was just a long trip.
Right, like, it took him 4 hours to move the bridge, and in that time, nobody took a single shot at the bridge. But it's like, this is that, but in art. There's just, like, random changes of outfits and locations and all that kind of stuff. Oh, and the other example was when Dracula was talking to the X-Men, when they first put his head back on, and they're having that conversation. And you get the sense that, like, he's in this room, and they're kind of up above a little bit in another room looking through a window talking to him. Except every panel, when they go back and forth, the people are standing in a different order. They're standing next to different people every time they cut back to the X-Men.
Oh my god. I did not notice that.
There's one where it's like from left to right, it's Storm, Blade, Emma, and then the next one, it's Emma, Blade, Storm.
Yeah.
They're like musical chairs.
It's like, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
You know what? I'm looking at issue 3, because that's what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think Cyclops opens his mouth at all in this entire issue.
Does he ever open his mouth?
I mean, he has his lips part.
Sorry.
He has his lips parted, but his teeth are clenched still.
I always talk like this. This is how he talks. This is the only way I can talk with my teeth clenched and my mouth open.
Now say banana with your teeth clenched.
Banana.
You can't make me say
banana. I'm trying to do it. You have to really push the air out, and I don't want to yell because my wife is falling asleep in the next
room. Say purple banana.
Purple banana. It doesn't work.
Really hard.
What's Dracula?
Purple banana.
Oh my god.
I can't do it.
Guys, this is the kind of entertainment only 189 episodes can get you.
It took us this long to
get to this level of professionalism.
I mean, the thing with this comic is, there's, like, nothing to talk about. Like, nothing happened. Who is this guy? Like, who is this guy? There's a guy, the Lumberjack.
Lumberjack-Rendar?
Yeah, Lumberjack-Dash. Who is this guy?
He's their computer guy.
Yeah, but what's his name?
Salik.
He just works in IT.
He's their on-call IT guy.
What is his name?
I think they say the name of the guy sitting in front of him.
Yeah, that's Cypher.
Yeah. They don't
He has the mutant power of knows every language.
They don't have the other guy's name.
Broken. That's like the best power of them all.
Yeah, but see, the problem with... Okay, we're going on a tangent. I'm going to go on a little bit of Cypher tangent now.
It doesn't matter in this episode.
He's, like, an awesome character, and his power is also awesome. Except that he never really, like... It feels like his power is, like, forced into stories.
I feel like he could be basically omniscient if you stretched it far enough. Like, if Grant Morrison wrote X-Men again with Cypher as a character, Cypher would be omniscient because he would speak the language of the universe. But he wouldn't call it universe. He would speak the language of the Cosmo Wavelengthatron, whatever the fuck, something weird sounding he got from some stupid philosophy book he read last week. But you know what I mean, because he would speak the language of the universe, so he would know the outcome of fate. It'd be some stupid bullshit like that.
But yeah, he's a cool character, and I think, it's an awesome power.
Thank you for just ignoring me, because that had no relevance. I appreciate that.
I have another tangent to go on. In issue 6, we see Emma Frost applying lipstick, and it's bright blue.
Yeah.
Does that mean her lips aren't blue? She's just from the 90s? Because, like, sky blue lipstick was a thing. It wasn't a thing, but they made it in the 90s, whereas they don't make it now.
Is it sky blue or, like, silver? I also thought it was, like, silver.
I can't tell. Either way, It's like very 90s. Late 90s. I'm just offended because her lips aren't really blue.
I feel like they'd be really easy to do. She could just selectively make her lips diamond.
It's a secondary mutation.
That would be even more... I feel like Emma would be all down for the bling, and that would make her even blingier.
Yeah.
Dude, like why doesn't... She never has to wear earrings. She can just turn that part of her ear into diamond.
I feel betrayed because I always thought she had these cool-looking blue lips and nails because she was born that way, baby. But she just has, like, Wet n' Wild lipstick hoard from 1998. Sorry, I'm getting into weird girl stuff, I think. Wet n' Wild is a brand, and it made a bunch of really ugly lipsticks in the 90s.
Oh, I know Wet n' Wild.
Do you, Andy?
Yeah, not personally. I had a girlfriend in high school who was obsessed with bad makeup. Yeah. So. Wow.
This episode.
Yeah. Oh, I have another art tangent, too.
Okay, sick. Do it.
Okay, so, how Asian is Jubilee? I can't decide.
Wait, is she Asian at all?
Yeah.
Well, no, I know, like, the character's Asian, but, like, in the art, on a scale of 1 to Asian.
I totally thought she was white.
She looks kind of white, but she looks kind of Asian.
I think that probably answers your question from Andy's perspective.
No, I mean, just, like, I just, like, always thought that Jubilee was a white person.
No, she's Asian.
Because in this, every woman's face is the same. I would say Jubilee is the same amount Asian as Aurora Monroe.
Oh, okay, I think I know why you think this. You watched the X-Men cartoon as a kid, right?
Yes.
Her parents are white.
Yeah, and she looks mostly white in the cartoon.
But in the cartoon, those parents are her adopted parents.
Okay. Okay, then I've been wrong my whole life.
Yep.
Okay, got it.
I mean, I used to think she was white because she was just yellow in the comics, and I thought it was bad, like, coloring or, like, insufficient technology.
It was just, like, spillover from her jacket.
Yeah, like, I thought that they just didn't have a proper flesh tone.
That's why her jacket's yellow. Oh, my God. Mind blown.
Whoa.
But everyone else... Okay, so I think normally when artists draw Asian people, they try to distinguish based on facial features, because that might make sense. Everyone else looks the same, though.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. Take Storm and change her skin color, and she looks the exact same amount Asian as Jubilee.
Emma Frost also has similar facial features.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like, that's how I rate any Jubilee comic. Like, can I tell she is Asian at first glance? And this is actually important to me, because for so long I wanted a cool, awesome, like, Asian superhero in the comics I was reading growing up. And there was, well, cool, awesome, I don't know, but there was an Asian superhero, and I just didn't know it because of questionable art. So, like, this is near and dear to my heart, that she should clearly be Asian, and she's just not here, and that bugs me.
I mean, even now, who are good Asian heroes? The first one that comes to my mind is Amadeus Cho, but then when I think about that, it feels a little bit racist, because his superpower is basically that he does math really good.
Oh, mine's worse. The first one that comes to mind for me is, like, August General in Iron.
He's cool.
He's super cool, but...
The Great Ten are all pretty awesome, but there are some racist ones in there, too. Well, not racist, they're just...
They're stereotypical.
I wouldn't say that those are any more racist than the portrayal of Captain America, except for the fact that Captain America is a fleshed-out character. I mean, he is Wonder Bread.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of, like Shang-Chi.
Yeah, a lot of stuff like that.
But I think he's awesome. Oh, Ryan Choi. The Atom.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
he was really good.
They killed the fuck out of him, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I like Shang-Chi. I think he's a great character, actually. I mean, I don't... I just think he's cool. Lady Shiva? Well, is she a superhero, or she's just a... You know, from Batman?
She's anti-hero? Depends on how you read. It depends on what run you read.
She's pretty badass.
Read Birds of Prey. She's fucking awesome in Birds of Prey.
Well, okay, and then there's times when they kind of do, like, remember Zorn from the Grant Morrison X-Men?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was like a Chinese superhero, but it turned out it was just Magneto the whole time.
Spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yeah. Moral of the story, we need more, like, strong Asian role models in comics.
Yeah. Ones that whose powers aren't that they're good at math.
Oh, I really like Amadeus Cho.
I really like him, too, and I didn't even think about how that was even a little bit racist until, like, right now.
Oh, Mantis from Avengers.
Who?
Well, now she's green, though. From Guardians of the Galaxy, remember Mantis?
Uh-uh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Green lady.
Yeah.
So she's actually Vietnamese.
Oh, I thought she was alien.
No, but it's like she went into space and then became like...
Oh, and became greenified. Green. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I looked up a list. Okay, so I'm looking at a list of Asian superheroes.
Oh, there's...
And so it's like a bunch of... There's like a bunch of comic book characters, right? But then there is Trini Kwan from Power Rangers.
God.
The original Yellow Ranger.
Yeah. Please tell me... Crimson Typhoon's squad is on there, too.
No.
Balls.
What about
not really...
Red Arrow's baby mama?
Cheshire?
Yeah.
Well, she's not a superhero.
Wasn't she for a little bit? I thought she tried to be good for 2 minutes.
That's Lady Shiva.
Okay.
Lady Shiva tried to be good for the Birds of Prey. Anyway, you guys want to rate this?
Sure. What a lovely talk about racism.
David, you go first.
Man, I don't even know, like, what to rate this, because I'm really torn, because it's not good. But, man, I would be lying if I said that I didn't enjoy reading it. Like, it was fun to read. And, like it felt kind of tedious at first, but then it was kind of ridiculous. But then when, like, I keep coming back to this, but when Iceman got blessed, I was like, man, this comic could be going places.
That's a fucking good idea.
It's like... Things could be going places, but then it doesn't. Like, I mean, there's a part where Dracula punches his son so hard that his, like, shirt flies open.
No. I'm sorry. I gotta interrupt you there, because his son ripped his shirt open before he fought his daddy.
Oh, really? See,
sorry.
I mean,
he's
believe
like,
you, but
fight.
I...
Roar, Hulkamania.
I feel like what happened was that he, like, Dracula, like, delivered a punch to him and it caused his shirt to open. Like, he punched him so hard his buttons flew off. Like, I don't even know. I don't know. But, so I guess I have to assign this a number.
Yeah, that's the general
Let's
idea.
Go. Wait, so one out of five. Let me see. I don't know.
Remember, 2.5 is average, so...
Let's go with the two. We'll go with two.
Okay.
Because it was fun. But, you know, I'm looking at issue 6 again, Jen, and I don't think he took his own shirt off. I think it got punched off. Or, okay, it looks like it's slowly coming off more and more as they fight.
Where is it? Because, oh, so you see where Jubilee is handing him the sword?
Yes. Oh, yeah, he is kind of unbuttoned.
Actually, but in the next panel it's fully on, so I owe you an apology. You were correct.
He got his shirt punched off. Isn't that better? I mean, I don't know.
No, wait. Yes, it is. Because, like, if you were in a fight with your dad, would you rip your shirt open? Like, that's weird.
Their whole dynamic is weird. This whole fucking thing is weird. Alright, so a 2?
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 2. I'm, like, looking at issue 6 again, and there's, like, this part where, like, after they beat Dracula and, like, everything's kind of back to normal, and there Cyclops is, like, at his desk. And so in one panel, Emma's, like, standing behind him, looking over his shoulder at the computer. Then the next panel was a close-up on Cyclops' face, where he's kind of got his hand on his chin, like, rubbing his chin. It's like a, kind of thing. And then the next panel is Emma standing in front of him with, like, her back, like, arched and her butt sticking at him.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell is that? What is this? Why is she standing in that pose? I don't know.
She was just twerking. It was off panel.
And then the next page, there's like a close-up of Blade's very bushy mustache.
Yeah.
I think it probably grew in response to being so close to Wolverine's sideburns.
He has an empathetic facial hair.
Yeah, that's Blade's secondary mutation.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 2. I don't even... This comic something else.
I'll go next. I was going to give this a 2. And then the more and more I saw of the art, I was like, I got to give this a 1.5. Because The art's inconsistent, and really, what you know, what it looks like to me. It looks like really good. It looks like somebody who Marvel found when they were searching through like high quality Rule 34.
So they just hired somebody from DeviantArt.
Yeah, somebody from DeviantArt or like the the Rule 34 subreddit.
Paco Medina is like a pretty well known comic book artist. That's why I feel like
I know I feel bad because honestly, like what I said earlier, we're kind of slamming on the inconsistency of the art and the quality and like the circle boobs and stuff. But legitimately, he's a fucking way better artist than I will ever be. So like, understand, listeners, we're making fun of it, but legitimately, it's awesome that he can draw that well. But we got to rate this, so we got to compare it to other artists that we know, right?
I mean, you're not rating it because it's bad. It's because in this comic, it's inconsistent, right?
Yeah, it's inconsistent. And like straight up, I know we're here. We're critics. We're doing the easy thing. We're knocking it down a peg. We're poking fun at it. But compared to other comics that we've read and other artists that we've seen, this isn't as good. This comic doesn't hold up.
I've read lots of other books that where Paco Medina does the art and
they don't look like covered up Rule 34.
Yeah, I think he does a much better job in other stuff. Like he's doing the Nova artist right now, and it's like I think the art in that is great.
Okay, so but, maybe it's just this. Anyway, so I was gonna bring it down to a 1.5.
Well, I mean, you're not rating Paco Medina, right?
No, I'm rating the whole comic, like the vampire terrorist being pointed at the wrong person, the hacky sack kumbaya in Union Square, like. Whole bunch of stuff, except I'm going to bump it up to a 2 just for my favorite moment when, like, Cyclops' little drop the mic one-liners, like, I just want you to follow your heart and crap like that. For making me actually not loathe Cyclops with every fiber of my being, this goes back up to a 2. It's not a 2.5, though, because Cyclops is pretty much the only character in this comic, so 2. Jen, let her rip.
Oh, man, I'm going to say the most offensive thing of the night.
Do it.
This is the Pacific Rim of comics.
Oh, so you can't say that. I love Pacific Rim.
I do, too. It's like one of my favorite movies. I also love Pacific Rim. But, and I want to believe that this is a comic that is so genuine in its, like, B grade that it turns to irony without the irony being intended. It's, like, post-hipster. I want to believe it, and I know that's not true. I know it's. I know there are just lapses in quality here, but there are so many things about this comic that are just, I don't know, like, they're beyond crazy. With that said, the art, like, people just kind of blink places. There are things, like, I'm still on the page where the shirt gets ripped. And he takes it off, and then it's whole again, and then it gets punched off. And it's like, that shirt fastened itself, to like, midway through the scene somehow, and then came unfastened with a punch. And it was, no, it just is inconsistent. So, I don't know, like, I want this to be genuine in, like, a really funny way. I want all the times I just cracked up laughing to be intended, but I know they weren't. Like, and there are some really great scenes in here. Like, there's one right after Scott blasts Wolverine, or right after Scott blasts Blade in the back, there's just Wolverine, like, staring at him flabbergasted, and that's, like, one of the best panels in here. So, I mean, it has these little gems that are just, like, all-out entertaining that I want to give, like, a 5. But I can't, because I don't think it was intended to be this. So I want to put out the caveat that on a scale of 1 to 5, I would give Pacific Rim a 10. This, on a scale of 1 to 5, does also get a 2. Because I guess that whole little mini ramble was just me saying, like, I wanted it to have better intent, and I know it didn't.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, Pacific Rim, I always go back to this, I don't remember what it's from, but somebody on the internet posted things somewhere that described Pacific Rim as either the dumbest awesome movie or the awesomest dumb movie.
I think it's probably both.
Yeah. And it's probably both, and either way, it's super fun to watch. But yeah, this kind of is dumb. And kind of awesome? It
had awesome parts.
At first I was offended, by your comparison, but now I see where you're coming from, and I can concede that it is a valid comparison. Anyway, that wraps up our Dracula versus Blade and Friends series. So what we have next, this next series has been in our brainstorm list for like at least a year now, but I couldn't think of the things to fill it out. But finally, we hobbled together some, and we actually made it a 4-episode series. So next week, we're going to start our comics about music-themed heroes, or just comics about music. So we're going to start off the series with Nine Rings of Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
It's a trade paperback. Collects the mini-series, issues 0 to 5, and the preview issue from 1999, Nine Rings of Wu-Tang. We're going to follow that up with the New 52 Vibe, which is called Justice League of America's Vibe. Are any of you guys familiar with Vibe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure am.
He's a music-themed hero who came into prominence because of Justice League Detroit back in the late 80s. Glorious. After that, we're going to read Archie Meets Kiss.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then we're going to finish it up with some Dazzler. We're going to read, like, the first run or two runs out of the Essential Dazzler collection, because yes. I honest to God, usually what I do for research is I just Google best insert character name here story or best insert character name here trade, and for Dazzler literally nothing came up, so we're just gonna fucking read some Dazzler. That's 4 weeks from now, though. We'll sort out exactly which issues probably before then and let you guys know. If you want to know more of the specifics about what we got coming up, such as which issues are in the Archie Meets Kiss and all that, you can go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Shows. Click on that. It'll list everything. It has like little Amazon links and my comic shop links to exactly the trade that we're going to be reading. So just click on those. If you're not sure, if you don't know, click on that. It'll take you to the page. It'll tell you what's collected, all that good stuff. If you have a suggestion, though, for what we should read after this music theme stuff, we can probably fit it in before our episode 200. We might be able to do it after episode 200, but I can't make any guarantees because everything's going to change after that episode. Everything will change. Nothing will ever be the same after episode 200. It's all going to... One of us might die. I don't know. So no guarantees, but send us an email anyway at...
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or you can do it on the social medias. I'm fairly sure the social media will be there after episode 200, but no guarantees again. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.